some of the people that still exist that are still struggling that were Black Panthers is Assata Shakur, of course, who's in exile in Cuba, which they keep trying to drag her out of there. And hopefully Fidel, you know, stays around long enough to keep her down there. I think that's our only hope. I actually had the pleasure of meeting her in 96 when I was there in Cuba for a conference, and she's a lovely person, as is many of the Black Panthers, former Black Panthers that I've met through my few years of activism. Also, Mumia Abu-Jamal, he also was a Black Panther. He started out, too, at 14 years old as a Minister of Information, which I guess that's reporter, isn't it? Sort of reporter, but a cool way of saying it, and I think that was gives you a good feeling. Anyway, he's suffering from COINTELPRO, as well as is Leonard Peltier. I mean, these are three people that, you know, have just gotten a really bad rap from the press, from the government, from all those things. And I'm wondering, what do you think the hope is for Assata Shakur?
Okay, you had the pleasure of meeting Assata. I've never met Assata. I was a Panther out of New Jersey primarily, which means I didn't necessarily know a lot of Panthers from New York, even though I did know some. And then at the time that I got involved, me and Jihad got involved with the Panthers, there was already Panthers went underground. And when the split happened in 71, a lot of people disappeared. The split being there, in the end, there was an internal split in the Black Panther Party that revolved around direction. There was a tendency to move towards reformism on one part, and there was another tendency to stay towards more revolutionary, radical revolutionary, a more radical direction. There was also the split involved internal democracy, where there was those who felt that there was a big breakdown in internal democracy, where the rank and file or other chapters were isolated from the central leadership, was located in Oakland, California. So those things came to a head. And even though the media, now again the media comes into play, even though the media made it a Huey Newton, Eldridge Cleaver battle, that was not really the case. If anything, those figures represented the two tendencies that were struggling within the Black Panther Party for direction. And the Huey, if I have to put it in that sense, those who sided with Huey as the figurehead of that tendency were moving in a more reformist fashion, but also were becoming more isolated from the rest of us. And those who tended to be included under the Eldridge factions, we tended to feel like there was a need to become, to remain revolutionary, to remain radical, and to increase the internal democracy in the Black Panther Party. Those things didn't work out well. We made a lot of mistakes. We bought into a lot of COINTELPRO tactics unknowingly, to the point where it caused internal war. And there were Panthers who lost their lives during this time. Assata, around this time, even when you read her book, you'll see that at this time there was a lot of paranoia, because the Panther Party was still dealing with COINTELPRO and the local police departments from whatever area they were from. So we had to watch our backs from two sides now, from that faction that we were somewhat at war with and with our acknowledged external enemies who wanted to wipe us out, the Hooverites and everybody. Assata at some point went underground. At a certain point in 73, Assata, Sundiata Kole, and Zaid Malik Shakur, all right, they was in the car traveling on the New Jersey, the infamous New Jersey Turnpike. And police car stopped them, and it may have just been because of a faulty backlight, and stopping them, and with being what I say pigs, wanting to, you know, these is Black people in the car, and they want to do a little harassment you know, things got out of hand and a shootout occurred. In that shootout, Asada with her hands up in the air was shot, and one of the pigs was shot. The pig died, and I used the word pig intentionally, especially after our latest little 41 bullet incident, because that's what they are. If that's what they do, we should call them what they are. But anyway, the cop died, the pig died, Zaid Malik Shakur died, Asada was laying there dying from the bullet wounds that the cop put into her, and Sundiata tried to get away. A few days later, they caught up with Sundiata in the woods, and they did their number on Asada, took her to the hospital, beat her up a little bit more, and when they caught Sundiata, they charged Asada and Sundiata with the pig's death and with Zaid Malik Shakur's death. It was like, you're all part of the same thing. Whoever dies, whatever happens, you're all going to get the same charges. So, I mean, it was like they were never going to get a fair trial, if there's such a thing in America as a fair trial. So it was just a matter of how they were going to railroad them through the courts. But before New Jersey could do anything to them, New York was looking for them. New York had Asada on a bunch of charges, from bank robbery to kidnapping. Same thing with, as they did with Twyman. They was charging Asada with everything. So Asada went through a number of trials only to be acquitted. And then when it finally got to the New Jersey Turnpike incident, that was the one where they was able to railroad her and Sundiata, convict them and give them life plus 15, 20, 30 years and throw away the key. So Asada was doing time. Sundiata was doing time. They put Asada in the men's section of a jail, the men's section of a prison. They had ex-security on Sundiata. At the time that they were in there, I was still in Jersey. We were working in the Plainfield community when we heard that the incident went down and Sundiata was still free. Some of us hit the highways. We said, well, hey, maybe there's a chance we see him somewhere and can pick him up. Didn't happen. But the next year, during the course of some burglaries that our little crew in Plainfield were doing, and we used burglaries as one of our methods of funding our political activities, we got captured for some burglary. So me and another comrade got captured, and we happened to be put in the same jail that Sundiata was in. We had a chance to meet Sundiata, and even though they wouldn't let us get together, we had a chance to talk. They was so afraid of Sundiata and him being around other prisoners that they cleared off a whole tier and had him on a whole tier by himself. So only thing he could do was just walk up and down the tier, you know, like that. But he could yell over to us, and we could yell back to him at certain times. And to keep security on him, every week they would change our tiers so that none of us could be able to consistently communicate with him. At the same time, they're doing their number to Asada. They're not, you know, respecting any of her rights as a human being. They're just dogging her. But to push forward a little bit, after they're sentenced to prison, Asada goes to the women's prison in New Jersey. And this is like, what, 1979? A combined unit of the Black Liberation Army and some other elements from the Weather Underground. And I think they called themselves the Revolutionary Armed Task Force, activated a plan to go and get the sister and free her from the women's prison she was in. And I think due to some very good planning and a lot of daring individuals who decided to be a part of this move, they was able to successfully go in that prison, get Asada out of there, and get her away without anybody being captured and Asada being safe. Eventually, Asada made her way to Cuba. What people need to know about that is that during the time that Asada and Sundiata were on trial, and all the trials that Asada was in up until the last one, which was the Turnpike one, Asada got very little support from the left. She mainly got support from the nationalists, the Black nationalists in the community, organizations like the East and Brooklyn and others who love the BLA. They love the Black Liberation Army. They love the concept of it. They love the fact that it was individuals who were courageous enough to bring that concept into a reality. So when there was trials, the South had trials in New York for bank robbery, kidnapping, you wouldn't see but a few people there, but you would see the young people from the East, from the kids on up, you know, who were there to give support to the soldiers of the Black Liberation Army. I'm trying to think of the white revolutionary organizations that have always consistently supported ASADA. Some of the radical feminist organizations or radical feminist women who supported ASADA that came from out of SDS. I'm trying to think of the political organization that was the main support for Weather Underground, but I can't think of it now. Prairie Fire, different groups like that, they would be there. You would not have the mainstream left supporting us. And, I mean, we understood that, you know, and though we might get angry, we understood it, and that was just the way it was, and we struggled on.
Who would be the mainstream left?
Mainstream left would be groups from The Guardian to Workers' World to the Socialist Workers' Party, whether they was the Trotskyist groups, whether they was October League. It was like when it came to us, Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army, taking that bold step of armed struggle, then there was problems. And it was like there was always problems, because I think one of the problems historically with the leftist groups was that they could not accept the Black Panther Party as being a legitimate Marxist-Leninist organization. As a Marxist-Leninist organization, we were not a traditional Marxist-Leninist organization. So we did not hold high the banner of the proletariat or the working class as being the vanguard of the revolution. In the Black Panther Party, we said that the lumpen proletariat would be the leading force in the revolution. The lumpen proletariat meaning the street people, welfare people, the homeless, those people who had been so marginalized by society that they were actually outside of the means of production, or they were just on the next step from becoming useless to the means of production. So in Huey's analysis and in Eldridge's analysis, they said that those who are being thrown out by automation and cybernation would actually make up the leading ranks of the black revolution and by extension the American Revolution. The Marxist-Leninist groups, traditional ones, couldn't buy that. All right, so they never looked at us. They just looked at us. We was just crazy, and we were just polluting Marxism and Leninism. So even at this, taking this step for armed struggle, it was the same thing. They would come up with the excuses: if the time is not right, it must be a mass armed uprising, or it has to be. It's just that you could not justify to them the right to strike back by any means necessary, even if it did not follow the pattern that you have been taught had to be used.
Yeah, you still have those groups out there today selling newspapers at all the demonstrations, still preaching for workers to unite. There's still a lot of fallout from COINTELPRO. You have ASADA Shakur in Cuba, Leonard Peltier from the American Indian Movement in prison for 27 or so years now, Mumia Abu-Jamal on death row for 17 years. It's not over.
No, it's not over by a long stretch. And though sometimes there's moments of doubt that may come from, you know, just being depressed sometimes from a lot of the things that's going on today in the absence of a movement, I know for me and many others who I do stay in touch with, we still believe that revolution is still possible. We're still optimistic, even though it takes a battering sometimes. Indicative of what's going on today is, like with ASADA and Mumia and Leonard, is that this movement is, well, I won't even say it. A lot of times I catch myself as, because I don't really believe there's a movement. But let's say that the system is still declaring war on anyone who poses a threat to not so much its rule, but how they have brainwashed people into believing that revolution is not possible. So if someone comes up like an ASADA, if someone comes up like a Mumia or a Leonard Peltier, who can help challenge people in their acceptance, seeming acceptance of this present state of things, and the system says, you got to go. Here you have Mumia, who, like you said, started off as a 14-year-old joining the Black Panther Party, Minister of Information, getting that information out, walking the streets, talking with people, you know, the whole bit. Or someone like Leonard Peltier, who is working among the most subjugated group in America, in Babylon, as we say, where political murders were happening so much, but were kept so out of the news and kept so quiet from the rest of us, we didn't even know what was going on. That political activists in the Native American communities, they were just being shot down and killed, and no one knew, and no one was doing anything about it. And then you had to have Wounded Knee, you had to have Alcatraz to bring national attention on what this government and what these corporations were doing to the Indians and all their goon squads, you know, from the Bureau of Indian Affairs and other freelance reactionaries were just trying to wipe these revolutionary Native Americans out. So Leonard didn't die out there on the reservation. Mumia didn't die on the street that night. Asada didn't die on the turnpike. People still remember what they're about, what they stood for, because that struggle is one that still has to go on. So as people try to keep that in their community's attention, the government and other forces have to do things to say, no, you can't do that, because they know that many things can come together to begin to spark another movement towards destroying this system. So you got to do something to keep Leonard and Mumia and Asada out of this. So you got the governor now of New Jersey who, in thinking about running for president, she needs a scapegoat, sort of like what George Bush had when he ran for president. He needed a Willie Horton. So here comes Governor Whitman's Willie Horton. She chooses Asada to pick on, to draw the public's attention to and say, listen, she's a criminal. She killed a cop. She's escaped to Cuba. She's living fine over there. She's doing great. It's an insult. We want her back. She's so outrageous that she writes a letter to the Pope and says, listen, Pope, you got to tell Fidel, bring her back. You know, like the Pope can influence Fidel and Fidel just throw his principles to the wind and say, okay, Asada, you got to go back now. That's not going to happen.
I'm Asada Shakur. The first time I heard a tape of one of Mumia's radio broadcasts, it was the first time I fully understood why the United States government was so intent on putting him to death. I make a special appeal to you, sisters and brothers, to fight tooth and nail to save Mumia's life and to free him from the grips of his oppressors. As you honor our forefathers and foremothers, I urge you to honor our living heroes. When you honor the names of Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman, and Malcolm X, I urge you to honor the names of Geronimo Gijaga, Sundiata Okoli, Mutulu Shakur, and Mumia Abu-Jamal. I urge you not to forget and not to betray our living heroes. If we ignore their struggle, we are ignoring our own. If we betray our living history, then we are betraying ourselves. We could not save Malcolm X, but we can save Mumia. We can save him, and we must save him. Because we love our brother, and we need our brother to help us fight for freedom. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Free all political prisoners. Let us carry on our tradition to freedom.
As a youth in the 60s, I was impressed by the Black Power movement that was sweeping Black America and the Black world in Africa and the Caribbean. So I remember me and a brother named Eddie Jones and a few other brothers, about four or five brothers from North Philly, went to a demonstration in South Philadelphia. It's at the Philadelphia Spectrum, which is a big sporting arena. This was 1968, and it was the presidential nomination of George Corley Wallace III, I think that's his name. when he was running for president on the American Independent Party. In retrospect, it's kind of crazy to think that we would go down to a demonstration in South Philadelphia, which is like predominantly white, and protest against George Wallace coming to Philadelphia. But at that time, you know, we believed that it was our city as well. So we did it, and every one of us got our asses kicked by plainclothes policemen. You probably heard the tale, I beat you so bad your own mama won't know you. Well, it has a particular relevance to me because as I was laying in the hospital, charged with assault and aggravated assault and beating of a police officer, my own mother walked by me, looked me dead in the eyes and kept walking because she couldn't recognize me. I was beaten, unrecognizable. I was in my mid-teens at that time. From that period and from those experiences, from me having to go through the hell of that and seeing the complete lack of power of people to resist that, I was attracted to the Black Panther Party. So because there was not a functioning, active Black Panther Party at that time, we founded one and built one in Philadelphia. I was the lieutenant of information. My career as a journalist began with the Black Panther newspaper in Philadelphia, New York, the Ministry of Information, and on the Black Panther newspaper in Berkeley, California. There is where I learned how to write, learned how to write from a revolutionary perspective, perhaps.
You have Mumia. His life is so urgent that we move to support Mumia because his life really is in danger. Any day, if this governor or whoever else has the power to sign that order, if they choose to do it, can within no time be marching him to this death chamber. And if people don't come together, not only protest, but actively move to stop this execution by whatever they have to do, they will have killed another voice who has come to symbolize someone who speaks out in our behalf for freedom, revolution, and just human decency. And you have Leonard Peltier, who they have all the evidence that they need. If they don't want to give him a new trial, they know that there's enough to throw in doubt that he shot these marshals or whatever they were. And not that I'm one who cares, even if he did, I don't care that he shot them, but the evidence says that there's some doubt there, that they can give him a new trial. They can't afford to, because he can come out and become that next symbol, not only for the Native Americans, but for others of us, that we can win, that we can get this back on the road. Same thing with Daruba coming back out. The same thing with Geronimo coming back out, that they can help keep that spirit of revolution alive, to bring people together and to take this system on again.
The two you mentioned, Daruba Bin Wahad and Geronimo Pratt, they were both released from prison. Was that through a trial or just finally by default? I heard that and I was always surprised that any of this goes on. I mean, sometimes you just think they're just never going to let these people out, but I guess their time came.
Well, in both cases of Daruba and Geronimo, these were two cases where early in the game, there was evidence to support their innocence, that they were not the individuals who the government was looking for. But because they were political figures, because they were revolutionaries, and I can say this about both of them, they still are to this day revolutionaries, but at the time, they were not only just revolutionaries, but they were very outspoken, they were very dynamic, and they possessed the skills to mobilize people. The government could not afford to let them out. You're dealing with someone like Geronimo, who went into the armed forces, the government's armed forces, was trained, became a good soldier for them, went and served their missions, special forces and everything. But at some point begins to learn that this is not what he should be doing, and makes a tremendous decision to come back and become a revolutionary for his people and to share them skills within the revolution in the Black community. So he does that within the Black Panther Party. He becomes the person who trains Panthers into the use of weapons and how to defend their offices and how to defend their programs. And they know that Geronimo was very good at that. Daruba was like Bunchy Carter, who was a Panther who was killed along with John Huggins by members of Ron Karanga's organization, US. Both were people who were from the gangs. These were people who, if one would watch Battle of Algiers, these are lumpen people. These are street people. These are gang people who became politicized and could also now turn those skills into revolutionary weapons. They could go back to former members. They could go back to present members and rap and begin a dialogue. And the next thing you know, you might have such and such a gang now becoming a political organization like the Young Lords, which showed the possibility of a gang turning into a revolutionary organization. Daruba had that potential. So they were individuals who the government had to get rid of. They didn't care about the fact that they were innocent. That's not what American democracy is about. The American democracy, American justice works in the interests of those who are in power. So if you got a threat, you get rid of it. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. If you've done it in other countries, it's a simple thing. So they withheld information on Daruba. They withheld information on Geronimo to make sure that they would get convicted and put away for years. 20-something years later, they're let out. They didn't do anybody no favors. You understand? I mean, they shouldn't have been in there from day one. But then with the fact that there were some people who never let go of the cases, who kept the pressure on, at some point they said, okay, listen, here's the evidence. Okay, we see the evidence. We'll let them go. It's 20-something years. There's no movement. There's no threat. Let them go. No big deal. And I believe that was the reason why Daruba and Geronimo were released, because the government is just sure that they can't spark nothing. But, you know, you still have other cases going on. We still got to come behind Asada. We still got to come behind the New York Three. We got to come behind Seth Hayes and others. You got like Veronica Bowers and the MOVE people who are still in prison. And they're there because they were revolutionaries on the streets. So the government says, keep them there. Once we, as like a black community and other oppressed communities, begin to realize that these people are very important to us and that our fighting for them is also a way of reminding us constantly that there's a struggle going on and we can never forget that, then I think that we can begin to build a movement that will actually force the government to release them, either through some gesture, you know, to show how liberal they are, or whether by just the pressure that we can put on them that delivers some kind of threat of a consequence that they say, man, we better let them go. So whatever it would take, we need to do, because this is probably the most serious situation we've been in as humanity since this country was founded on the backs of other people.
Set out to do. Stand. There's a cross for you to bear. Things to go through if you're going anywhere. Stand for the things you know alright. It's the truth that the truth makes them so alive. Stand. All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal. There's a permanent crease in your right and wrong. Stand.
There's a midget standing tall,
and a giant beside him about to fall.
sense at all. Stand. Don't you know that you are free? Well, at least in your mind, if you want to be.
This concludes part one. Next week, Ashanti and his books, The Movement Today and For the Future. So listen next week for the conclusion of this two-part series on the Black Panther Party and the Black Revolutionary Movement, as told by my guest, Ashanti Alston, former member of the Black Panther Party and a Black Liberation Army prisoner of war.
Time to pick up the gun.
Officer.
Revolution has come.
Officer.
Time to pick up the gun.
Officer.
Revolution has come.
Officer.
Yeah.